This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Today is the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, that landmark Supreme Court decision made access to abortion services a federal constitutional right rather than a matter of state-by-state policy. Here in Michigan, abortion played a role in that flood of bills passed in the waning days of 2012 by the lame duck legislature and signed into law by Governor Snyder. The so-called abortion clinic law orders doctors to screen patients to make sure they haven't been coerced into having an abortion. It mandates new licensing and insurance requirements for clinics that perform more than 120 abortions a year. This new law has been the focus of heated protests since it was first introduced back in June, and it continues to polarize public opinion. The Michigan Catholic Conference and Right to Life are among those praising the law, saying it brings about, quote, long overdue reform and regulation of the abortion industry. And those who are blasting the law, including Senate Democratic leader Gretchen Whitmer, say it only succeeds in, and here's her quote, reducing or eliminating women's access to cancer screenings and other critically important care. Critics say this law makes Michigan one of the most repressive states in the nation for women's health. Well, let's get a physician's view of all of this. Joining us is Dr. Lisa Hope Harris. She is an assistant professor of obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Michigan. Dr. Harris, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, stepping away from all the emotions swirling around this law, objectively, what does this new law mean first for Michigan women, in your view?
Well, I should say at the outset that the Michigan Department of Community Health, MDCH, has not yet issued regulations in response to the new law. So we don't actually know how the state regulatory agencies are going to interpret the law.
Okay.
But that said, I think it's fair to say that there are four components to the new laws, and you alluded to some of them.
Mm-hmm.
The first is that centers, health centers that provide 120 or more surgical abortions per year and advertise those services be licensed as freestanding surgical centers. The law does include waivers, so the ability for clinics to not comply with specific elements of the freestanding surgical center requirements if they are not necessary to safeguard women's health and safety. So that's the first.
Okay.
Clinics will very likely be able to comply with this regulation. That for some, that might mean renovations. For some, for all, that will mean new kinds of licensing requirements. And for many, that will mean obtaining waivers for certain components of the requirements. But I am confident that clinics will be able to comply. And that means that women are unlikely to be directly affected by that component of the new law. They may be indirectly affected, though, because it will likely be expensive for clinics to make the changes required. And undoubtedly, some of those costs will be passed on to women, which is unfortunate. But healthcare centers that offer abortion and hospitals that offer abortion in the state are really committed to providing that care to women, no matter what the climate is, and they will buffer the effects of that.
What kinds of changes might a clinic have to do to meet this freestanding surgical center requirement?
Right. So there are very specific and lengthy requirements set out by the state for what it means to be a freestanding surgical outpatient center, or FSOF. And they include many things that are, all things really, that are good patient care, but some of them assume a different kind of acuity of surgical procedure being performed there than abortion. And so they require surgical rooms to be a certain square footage and recovery rooms to be a certain square footage and other things that aren't really necessary to provide safe abortion care. Abortion care can be surgically provided very safely in a regular office setting.
I see. But that changes now with this law.
That's one of the things that changes. There are a couple of other things that change. So one, you mentioned also the anti-coercion measures.
Yes.
So the new law requires that health centers and health providers screen women for coercion to have an abortion. Many do this already. We screen people for all kinds of things because we want to help people and make sure that they're safe. But this law specifies that we screen people for someone coercing them to have an abortion.
So this would happen in the patient workup. This would be happening as you're taking the patient's history and talking to them.
Exactly. The materials, the law says that the state, that MDCH will develop the materials. So we're waiting to see what those will look like. But the interesting thing about this component of the law is the Michigan Penal Code that actually defines what's legal and what's illegal was not changed. So to reflect that coercion to abort is a crime.
Oh.
So health centers and providers are going to be required to tell women that coercion to abort is a crime, but it is not actually a crime, at least not yet. Maybe in the next session, the legislature will address that. But it does put clinics in an interesting ethical position with respect to telling patients things that really are not true, at least not yet.
Because, as you say, there's no penalty for
this. There's no penalty for it.
And as you say, you haven't been, they haven't developed the material, so it hasn't come down. Might it consist of, here are some alternate options if you choose, if you feel you are being coerced? Might you have to offer options to abortion?
We do that already, centers that offer abortion do already. They present the options of continuing the pregnancy and parenting, continuing the pregnancy and adoption and abortion. So it's really interesting to me the assumptions about healthcare providers that offer abortion and about healthcare centers themselves. The law assumes that we don't have women's best interests in mind in offering abortion care. And really, that couldn't be further from the truth. People, doctors in general, and there's no reason to think doctors who provide abortion care are any different, they really want to ensure the health and safety of and well-being of their patients. And there's no reason to think that's different for abortion care providers than other doctors.
Now, what are the other elements? You said there was kind of four
building
blocks.
So there's two other elements. One is a ban on the use of telemedicine to provide medication abortion. So there are two ways that abortion can be offered in the U.S. and around the world. And one is a surgical procedure, and that tends to be what people think of the most.
Sure.
And the other is via a pill or a set of pills in a regimen that was developed and sort of tinkered with over the past 10 to 15 years in the U.S. And for medication abortion, it isn't actually necessary for a physician to be physically in the room with a patient having the abortion. Mm-hmm. And there's been some excellent, well-done studies showing that telemedicine is a safe and acceptable way to accomplish abortion, meaning a patient in a remote area is in a health center that has healthcare providers there but not a physician who can do screening and general health assessment. And somewhere else in the state, a physician can interact with the patient via a computer or television screen or monitor.
All right.
And if that physician is satisfied that the patient is safe to go ahead with the abortion, they can press a button that will open a locked drawer at the remote site, and then the medication pill would be dispensed. So that actually is not happening in Michigan currently. There were conversations beginning to, because that would be a way to offer abortion care to women in remote areas of the state. So now women have lost that possibility.
That's off the table.
It's off the table.
All right.
Yeah.
And the fourth component.
So the fourth component specifies that fetal remains need to be disposed of through cremation or burial or incineration.
What is typical practice? Prior to this law, what has been the typical practice?
Typical practice really is those things. I can't speak for all centers.
Sure.
But
in your experience.
In my experience, fetal remains are always disposed of properly. I think there is a desire to not have the kind of image of fetuses being disposed of disrespectfully. I'm not aware in any of the settings in which I've worked where that's been the case, but it's certainly an effective rhetorical tool.
The bottom line for the women of Michigan, how does this law change things for them?
In my view, centers that offer abortion are going to be able to protect women from most of the effects of this law, and they will not feel it tremendously significantly. But I should add two things to that. One is that the original version of the law that was passed in the House and the companion bills that were initially introduced with it, those would have tremendously and dramatically affected women's access to abortion and very likely would have been so difficult for clinics and centers to comply with that it would have really diminished services in the state, if not eliminated them altogether.
How so? What would have been so difficult?
Oh, well, there were many more provisions. First of all, the original versions of the bill eliminated the waivers to certain surgical center licensing requirements. So all centers would have had to follow the complete list of requirements, and that alone may have closed down many centers. Health centers that offered medication abortion would have been required to also be licensed as freestanding surgical centers, even though they were dispensing medication and not offering surgery. The fetal remains requirements would have been very difficult to comply with and would have required as many as four different people or agencies to be involved in the disposal of fetal remains, including a funeral director, a crematory, a medical examiner, and even potentially local law enforcement.
Okay.
There was a ban on abortion, all abortion after 20 weeks, with no exceptions for rape or incest or fetal anomalies or women's health. the law as proposed back then would have required some doctors who offer abortion care to carry $1 million in liability insurance, which is not a requirement for doctors generally. And there would have been a prohibition on the most effective method of medication abortion, the most effective regimen, and we physicians would have been required to use the less effective FDA-approved regimen that's older.
All right. So that has been modified out.
Modified out, and there were many people who worked tirelessly over the summer and the fall to ensure that women would be less impacted by the law. And I actually do give credit to the governor and his staff for getting the right experts at the table to talk about what the law would mean and what the law would mean for services, and for eventually getting a bill on the table that was workable.
And again, going back to the fact that this is a constitutionally acceptable medical treatment, and so people have a constitutional right to be able to seek this treatment.
Yes.
Although you did use the phrase protecting women from, and there are some people who feel that this protects women, for instance, the standards for the clinics. And there are criticisms saying that it's a move to put abortion clinics out of business to have this inspection and licensing as a surgical outpatient facility. Why would we not want to make sure that the clinics are all meeting safety and good practice requirements?
Well, of course we want clinics to meet safety and good practice requirements. And yes, advocates for the law have argued compellingly that these measures are necessary to protect Michigan women. And again, I'll point to that assumption built into the law that abortion providers themselves are not interested in exactly the same things. And I really do believe that it's unlikely that anyone cares more about the safety and well-being of women seeking abortion than the healthcare providers who are offering it. In addition, there are many skilled, accomplished researchers who are constantly trying to ensure that the safest and most effective regimens of abortion are being done. And there simply is not compelling medical evidence that surgical abortion needs to be done in a surgical center instead of an office to be performed safely. So, and many, many abortions, most abortions in this country are done safely in office settings. So, but there are two other reasons why I don't find the safety argument so compelling. And one is that providers who are offering fewer than 120 abortions a year are not subject to the requirements. And law and clinical evidence would say that the more you do of something, the better you are at it and the more safe you are at it and the more expert you are.
And that holds for any surgical procedure,
any medical procedure. Absolutely, any
medical
procedure. You want to see providers who are the most experienced. Mm-hmm. So if safety was really the issue instead of, say, stigma, then I really, legislators would be more interested in regulating the people who do very few procedures, because now I don't believe safety is an issue at all because abortion is so safe. Mm-hmm. But were there a safety issue, you would imagine the regulations should apply not to people providing the most care, but to people providing the least. And then finally, in the initial iteration of the law, doctors would have been required to use a less effective medication abortion regimen rather than the one that they use now. And to me, that tells me this was not about safety. This is not about what's best for women, but this is about targeting abortion providers for state regulation, regulations that are not required of other kinds of physicians.
And in your experience and in your opinion, not medically needed.
And absolutely not medically needed.
Dr. Lisa Hope Harrison, Assistant Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Michigan. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.